And welcome to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly. In this episode, we will discuss the 3-2 victory for Fulham against Nottingham Forest Wednesday night at Craven Cottage. We'll go through our opening thoughts on the match, the key moments. We'll also be rating the players, the Fulham manager, Nottingham Forest, and yes, the ref. Before we do discuss the match, I have to bring on my co-host first. I'll bring him on right now. David, how you doing? Or would that be Mike? Who's on the line with me?
Hello.
Would that be David Holly?
Yes, Russ. It's me. You said hello, so I'm saying hello back.
Okay. I was not sure if Mike Gregg was joining us. Mike, are you on the line with us as well? Okay. Do we have someone else on the line with us? Do you know, David?
I know. I can hear a lot of crackling, Russ.
Okay, I'm not sure which line is yours. I'm not sure which line is our other person calling in here. Because I know that Mike Gregg was thinking about coming on, and I was not sure. Did not get confirmation that person dropped off the line. So we'll see if that was Mike Gregg calling in. But, you know, let's move on. How are you doing today, David?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, that's fine, Russ. Mike says he's going to call in when I start laying into Jack Grimmer.
Okay, let's try this one more time.
Okay.
Mike, is that you, my friend?
It is, Russ, yes. I thought I'd be late like someone else was the other day.
Meow.
Welcome to the show, Mike. I would have introduced you, but I didn't get confirmation that you were going to be joining us. I was hoping you were going to come on, so thank you so much for joining us tonight, my friend.
Yeah, no problem. I wasn't too sure until a few minutes ago, but... Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, fantastic. I look forward to going through this match with the two of you. I watched the replay back this morning, and I think I got a good amount out of it, but obviously you two were there, so I'm looking forward to getting your thoughts on it. And, David, I'll just start with you. Just give me your opening thoughts of what we watched at Craven Cottage yesterday.
Well, once again, I think it's the older classic game of two halves, really. You know, the Forest goal at the end, we were pretty dominant in the first half. Although it wasn't a complete domination, Forest did have some good chances, which were both carved out by their kind of direct play and also by a couple of poor mistakes by our defenders. So they did have chances, and Bettinelli kept it, you know, the three-goal cushion. Second half, obviously, I think Forest came out buoyed by the goal on half-time. Put us under pressure. And then when we had that strange substitution, and I know that Parker was probably injured, but after that strange substitution and change of tactics and shape, it really did kind of, you know, we were really up against it, and it was no surprise that Forest got another goal. But thankfully we dug in, and you know, we got the result, and I think everyone would say, despite what the stats say, and, you know, that they seem to suggest Forest had more efforts on goal, from being 3-0 up in 30 minutes, it's a game you've got to win, isn't it?
Absolutely, David. You know, it's funny because the first half really was a dominating performance, and it's a little disappointing. You know, again, I think I mentioned to you, it's a little disappointing how the second half played out. But there are two ways to look at it. You know, again, it's disappointing that they let them back in the match, but they also showed the resolve to get all 3 points. So it's a little bit of both. But when you're up 3-0, David, and listen, there were other opportunities to score even more goals. Giving up that late goal was just such a kick to the gut. You know, again, we'll go through it, and I'm curious your thoughts when we get there. But that goal that was, I believe, it just entered stoppage time when they got their goal, and they really did nothing that first half. To get that goal had to be difficult for Kip, for the Fulham players going into the half. That was a momentum switch that just didn't need to happen. But we'll talk about that in a second. Let me try Mike again. We're having problems with Mike's line. Mike, are you still with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. I want to get your thoughts on what you witnessed. You know, again, David and I were just talking about it, but from your perspective, just give me your opening thoughts about what you saw at Craven Cottage yesterday.
Well, it was a thoroughly entertaining game. There's no doubt about that. And as a lot of people have said, it was definitely a game of two halves. I thought first half was some of the best football we've played all season. Certainly the most the most confident we've looked, and you know, absolutely destroying them at times, passing the ball around. You know, finally they were controlling the ball and passing it between Tunnicliffe and Parker and Kaki. You know, it all looked really good. It was, you know, for 45 minutes, and then, you know, we allowed them to get a free kick, and it was a well-taken goal. And as you just said, it gave momentum into the second half, similar to their game at the weekend, where, you know, first half they were the worst team, and then second half they seemed to step it up. And they came at us straight away in the second half, as we would do. If we were losing and get a goal back, it's the momentum of getting that goal in those last few seconds. And we struggled to get out of our half for, you know, a good part of that first half of that second half, you know, the second half, and Parker going off didn't help, change formation. So second half was disappointing. So we tend to leave the game with a lot of people looking at the negatives, when really I thought the first half was excellent, and if that's the way Kit wants to get them playing going forward, I'm more than happy with that.
You know what, you have an interesting take, because you can actually see both halves here, because again, like you mentioned, it's a tale of two halves. But you see more of the positives coming out of the first half than, I guess you could say, the negatives in the second half. So a very interesting take by you, and we will definitely go through this entire match. And I'm going to start with the key moments. And, David, I'm going to go right to you. Fulham did start bright. In fact, they had a very good opportunity to score right off the bat from Ross McCormack. He followed that up with his first goal of the match. And, yes, I did say Ross McCormack once again would score two goals. And I ended up scoring 3-1 was a deflection. I believe he still is credited with that goal, unless that's changed. But let's talk about the first goal by Ross McCormack in the 7th minute, David.
Well, you remember that I joked he'd score 3 goals. I said one of them would be an own goal. So
I
was kind of almost right there in a strange way. But, I mean, just before we go into that, yeah, what Mike said is really true. The whole perspective of the match bases on how it plays out. If we were really poor first half, we changed the halves over, and we won that game 3-2 with the second half being, that first half performance, everyone would come away saying, you know, what a fantastic performance it was. But because of the way it ended up, yes, people came away saying, well, yes, we won, but. So, yeah, Mike, that's it's a very good way of looking at it, how people's perception is. It's always the
Absolutely.
Way of these games, isn't it, I think? If you win a game in the last minute, a dour game in the last minute, even with one goal, it's a much better game than a game that you lead the whole way. But no, you know, James Doughton would be very pleased, obviously, that we started the game really strongly for the first time for quite a while. We really came out of the blocks, and the ball. I was very impressed initially with Tunnicliffe, because after he had a bit of a poor game on Saturday, he was really getting involved with all these quick passing moves, because we were cutting through them like a knife through butter. And as I remember I said on, you know, the other day, I thought they had a fragility about them, and that seemed to be right, that they just couldn't deal with it. And it was Tunnicliffe and McCormack, and Kakanicic, especially, I think, really, were the, you know, perpetrators early on. And, yeah, he had that safe shot. And then it was quite an interesting move, because I thought the ball was going to get cut out, and it came in from the right, and it fell into quite a big gap there, and Hugo got to it first and laid it off. But for me, I think they gave him much too much time. From my angle, I thought it was going to be a ball that got intercepted, but it didn't. They just sat there. They let Hugo lay it off into McCormack, and he still had a bit to do, but a great finish on his left foot into the corner, well placed. And, you know, it was absolutely justified from the start we had.
Absolutely, David. You know, being up 1-0 again, they deserve that, because, like I mentioned before, McCormack had a very good opportunity to score early, and it was a nice save by the goalkeeper. And then, you know, a few minutes later, this led to the goal. And, you know, again, Fulham were extremely dominant in the first half. And I'm glad that Mike mentioned this, because if Kit can get them to play like they did in the first half for an entire match, and this is the way that we start to play, there could be good things down the road, because this was very good football in the first half. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you, because, again, I want to go right to the second goal, which was in the 18th minute, again by Ross McCormack and set up by Hugo. Talk about this situation. Mike, you with us? Did we lose Mike again?
No, I'm here. I'm on the phone.
Oh, okay, not a problem, Mike.
I'm back. Well, I mean, it was the second goal was, you know, ball forward, Hugo just sort of lays it off to McCormack, and he puts it in from the D, and the angle I was, it hit the post, was almost went along the line and into the bottom corner of the net. And it followed up some really good play that we've been having, and Dave was right, you know, Tannercliffe, Kaka, they were putting all these through balls in. Kaka especially was getting in the box. I mean, not long after that, I'm not sure if you're going to mention it, but Fofana had a chance as well. Keeper made a good save. So, you know, it was back to the sort of passing we were doing in the early part of the season under Mad Felix, when, you know, we were playing well but not getting results, but the passing was back. And all this talk of long ball, which I read and people moan about, it's just not the way we play. And it was good, and I was happy for Hugo as well. You know, we've all, you know, 99% of us have probably said let's rest him and or drop him, probably the other way to put it. But you know, two assists or two and a half almost for the third one as well. And you know, okay, he's not scoring, but he certainly contributed last night to the first half performance.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Mike. Very, very good take on the second goal. And listen, I'll go right back to you because you already mentioned this. I was going to ask you about this opportunity by Seiko Fofana. Again, it could have been a little bit harder of a shot, but it was a very good opportunity by him. And, you know, I can't blame the kid for taking a shot, but just talk about this opportunity from Fofana.
Yeah, well, it was, you know, he's about 8 yards out, I think, you know, just out. And it's a first-time reaction. He puts his foot out and the keeper saves it almost point-blank. I don't think he really had that much time to, you know, he never had no time really to compose himself and get a, you know, take another touch at all. So it was a good chance for him. It's good to see one of our midfielders in the box as well. And, you know, again, another player who did well first half, maybe overshadowed by a couple of the other lads. And, you know, I think when he scores, he's somebody who's going to celebrate in a very unique way, I think. He seems to be that kind of character. But, it was unlucky, and it would have, you know, it would have been 3-0 then, and I could have seen us getting 4 or 5 before half time. And so, you know, another positive. And it's getting in the box a lot, and Kaka as well, pulling the ball back to him. And, you know, that's what we've been missing, and that's what Kakanicic brings to us. And some people are not too sure about him coming back, but he's definitely, you know, it's like a new signing for us.
You know, Mike, you bring up a very good point. Obviously, talking about Kaka and Seiko Fofana, but I want to focus on the fact that we could have been up 4 or 5. You know, again, looking back at it, 3-0 sounds great, but they actually had opportunities to really even be further ahead. And I don't know what to make of that, because it's funny, because I already saw the video from Kidd, and he talks about it as well. What are your thoughts about that? Is this something I wouldn't say be concerned about, but again, when you have a team down, you need to keep going. You know, 3-0 is great, but 4 or 5-0, you could have really put them away.
Well, if I thought at that stage, at 2-0, we were doing the
job
trying to get that third goal. We got the third goal, and I don't know if they deliberately slacked off. I mean, it's you know, we've all played in games where you start winning, it seems very easy, and you do ease off. But I think Dave, or you might have even heard it on the replay, you know, there was a stage where we were passing the ball around, and it was Olay, Olay, and that's great sometimes. But at that particular moment, it's happening right in front of me where I sit, and I just wanted something a bit more decisive and get that fourth goal. And it's just natural for some teams to just sort of, okay, we're 3-0 out, let's just relax and pass the ball around, when really they should be doing what they were doing 10 minutes earlier, which is being decisive and making those runs and looking for it. I don't think it let Forest back in the game as such in that half, but certainly, you know, if we got that third goal a bit earlier and we'd attacked them a bit more and there'd been a bit more luck, then yeah, there was a stage I was really thinking, yeah, we could be 4 or 5 nil up at half time here if we really really go at them. But unfortunately, you know, that's not what happened.
No, it didn't work out that way, unfortunately for us. But you know what? It was an excellent first half, you know, and I have to give him credit for that. But I just find it interesting that I thought that they could have been up 4 or 5 goals, and so did Kit, you know. And I think we're all on the same wavelength on that. That's like, wow, we could have really piled it on them. But like you mentioned, Mike, the third goal didn't come, you know, again, it didn't come till a little bit later. And David, I'll go to you, because in the 36th minute, there was the third goal by Ross McCormack. Talk about this deflection, you know, again, on the replay and then also listening to it. They weren't sure if they were going to give this goal to McCormack because it was deflected off of a player. So just talk about this.
I don't think the deflection really changed the kind of general direction of the ball was going. It just added a bit of loop on it, and which just helped take it over the keeper. It was, you know, he was kind of shaping up to do that type of shot anyway, that sort of, you know, curling into the top corner scenario. It was just, as I say, the deflection gave it a bit more loop and dip. So I think it's totally justified. It appeared to be on target that, you know, the goal goes to him, because that's the normal rules for it. But, you know, he was almost unstoppable first half there. They just didn't know how to deal with him, McCormack. And I think that's virtue of the fact that, you know, we started really well. And, you know, we came out, as I thought we might, in the diamond with Kaká at the front of the diamond.
Right.
And I think it justified playing him over Ruiz, because obviously Ruiz tends to be a bit more ponderous and stuff. With Kaká, there were a lot of short, quick darting runs that you probably wouldn't see with Ruiz. And this was pulling their defence all over the place. You know, it was almost, Kaká was in a kind of a free roll there. And we saw a lot more movement, and industry from Tiny Cliff. And Fofana did his bit as well. And it just, they just didn't know, and it just created this space. And this is where, you know, and we'll talk about it afterwards, where McCormack being up front central, or more or less up front central, you know, he was doing what he could do. And, you know, you asked me on Tuesday who's going to be our danger man to win it. I said McCormack. And
yep,
he proved to be the case. And it shows how dangerous he can be when he's up there.
Absolutely.
And of course, second half, he was moved out wide.
Well, we'll talk about
it. It was a completely sort of different scenario, which we'll talk about in a sec.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, we're definitely going to talk about that. We'll talk about the second half and the changes of the formation. I'm glad that you already mentioned that. Mike, I want to go back to you, because, again, we're up 3-0, and I'm listening to this match. You guys are there. And Gentleman Jim and Sean Davis just kept harping, let's just get to the half. You know, let's get to the half up 3-0. You know, it'll be great to get to the half up 3-0. And then, of course, what ends up happening, I believe just as we go into stoppage time, Henry Lansbury scores off of a free kick. Now, this is actually caused by a foul by Kostas Stafoulidis. And like I said, I believe it was just at the beginning of stoppage time. Talk about this and how deflating this was for you being there.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, Stafoulidis, he sort of, I don't know if he obstructs him or he sort of pulls him around. I mean, I haven't seen a replay of the actual foul, but I remember at the time thinking, yeah, that's a free kick. And it was a good free kick, and, you know, bending around the wall, right? And you can't blame Bettinelli. I thought the wall stood solid as well. So you've got to give him his due on that free kick. But, yeah, it was the old, oh, yeah, let's just hold on. And we hadn't taken our chances. And, yeah, you let them get back in the game. And I think, it affects you second half. It affects the fans, because straight away we're thinking, oh, well, we were leading at Forest. They're going to come back at us. I'm sure our players had a little bit of that in the back of their mind. I'm sure Stuart Pearce as well was going, you know, we did this before we got back. So it's set up for the second half. So I think 3-0. They would have been dead, and it would have been a much easier second half. But you just give them that little bit of chink of light to have a go at us. And, you know, Pearce is fighting for his job, and he's obviously, you know, got him fired up to go out second half. So, yeah, very disappointing. But like I say, Stafoulidis, can you blame him for the foul? You know, maybe, maybe not. But it was just unlucky. It was a good free kick. I think, you know, that's the main thing we have to say.
Yeah, listen, you got to give Lansbury all the credit in the world. That was a great taken shot and goal, and give him credit for that. And, again, just unfortunate way to end the first half, Mike. And like you mentioned, if you go up 3-0, I think the game is done there. But you give them life, and then they can see a way back in, and it completely changes everything. All right. Before we go to the second half, David just actually pointed out to me, and I apologize. Again, we'll call it early Alzheimer's or a golden, whatever you want to call it. I forgot to ask you guys your thoughts on the starting 11. So, David, let's go back. Again, it's a very good first half for Fulham, so obviously the lineup had to work. But I want to get your thoughts before the match began on the starting 11.
Yeah, I was pleased with it because it was definitely the shape that I said we should have. The only one that Mike's alluded to already was that I think Corley should be starting, not Hugo. So that was the only change in personnel, but it was the same shape with Kaká at the head of the diamond. Because if you remember, when I picked the team on Tuesday, I picked that position last because I was toying between Kaká and Ruiz, of course. And I think it totally justified picking Kaká over Ruiz because, as I say, we play with such a pace and energy that I don't think we would have done with Ruiz, who plays a kind of more patient game. So I was totally fine with the formation. I know we've had this sort of toing and froing between a 4-4-2 and a diamond, and you know Mike obviously would like the 4-4-2, but we started with the 4-4-2 on Saturday. It didn't work. We went to the diamond. It did work. So you know we've basically carried on where we left off with, and it was fine. And I was happy with that. It was just say Hugo. I wouldn't have started Hugo, and yes, he did provide a couple of assists there. But I thought that obviously Corley deserved his chance because Hugo hasn't really been firing. But, you know, otherwise, no problem whatsoever.
Okay. Very good take there, David. And I apologize for forgetting to ask you your starting 11 about the starting 11. And but good take by you because, again, I know that we wanted to talk about Corley Woodrow because we talked about that in the show before. And, Mike, I'm going to ask you the same question. What were your thoughts before the match? We obviously know it worked out well in the first half, but before the match, what were your thoughts on the starting 11?
Yeah, well, I picked an 11. It was 10 of those, and it was the same with David. It was a toss the coin between Woodrow and Hugo, and I would have gone for Woodrow because, you know, as much of a fan as I am of Hugo, I know he's been off form, and also I would have played 4-4-2. So, yeah, I was fine with it. I think given every possibility that he could have of a team that he could put out, I think it was the best he could do. And yes, he did surprise me actually by playing the diamond, but it did work out. And and we caught Forrest. Maybe that was part of it. Maybe for once Kit outsmarted the other manager by not playing the formation which was expected, which against a team which is quite direct, I would have expected two banks of four, and he didn't do that. So, you have to give Kit his due there.
Very good take by you, Mike, in talking about that. The formation might have been to his advantage, even though, again, possibly Stuart Pearce was thinking that he was going to play, like you said, 4-4-2. So very interesting take there. All right, Mike. I'm going to go right back to you. Let's go to the second half. And very early on, I could tell Fulham we're going to have some trouble here. And it started off, like I said, right off the get-go in the 49th minute, only 4 minutes into the second half. Kostas Stafoulias cleared a ball off of the goal line. And I knew at this point that the second goal was coming at some point. What were your thoughts about Stafoulias clearing this goal? And were you feeling the same way I was feeling?
Yeah, I think that everyone in the crowd felt it as well. That you get this feeling at the cottage, and I'm sure Dave will back me up on it. And I'm sure it's at every ground, really. You can just sense when a goal's coming. And part of you sort of feels, oh, we just need to get through this 10 minutes. Let's just get through it. And, Stafoulias, clear. If I remember rightly, he actually cleared one in the first half as well, but on one of their rare events. Attacks, but you could sense it coming, and I suppose we were lucky in a way that we prevented the second goal coming as early as that, because I do feel if they'd scored within that first 5 or 10 minutes, then they would have definitely got back to 3-3. We wouldn't have been able to hold out because the confidence would have just been shot, I think. And it was good. Rear guard defending by all the guys at times in that period. I'm sure you're going to talk about Parker in a minute. But, it was good by Stafoulias. He had to make up for it. He made a couple of mistakes in the first half. won a very dodgy header back to Bettinelli. So it was a good clearance. But he disappointed me, Stafelidis, a little bit yesterday, I have to say.
Okay, and I look forward to getting your rating when we get there, Mike, on Kostas, including, well, I should say the entire team. I'm looking forward to that. All right, you're right, Mike. We're going to go right to the substitution of Scott Parker. And, David, I'll go to you. Let's talk about this. In the 57th minute, Scott Parker comes off, as we find out now, with a knock, you know, with an injury. And coming in his place, again, this was a little bit of a surprise, was Brian Ruiz. Talk about this substitution, how this changed everything and changed the formation.
Well, obviously, at first, I didn't realize Parker had an injury, and I thought, what the hell is Kit doing as he lost the plot? Because it wasn't about bringing Ruiz on particularly. That wasn't the issue, although obviously Ruiz and Parker's not a like-for-like situation. This was a game where, you know, we needed to kind of dig in a little bit, really, because we were, at that point, we were still 3-1 up, but they were coming at us, and I thought, you know, we've massively weakened ourselves. Kit's gone a bit wild here. And the problem with bringing Ruiz on was that he changed the shape. We went to basically a 4-2-3-1 with, you know, Fofana and Tunnicliffe as the two central midfielders. Kaká on the right, where he's not particularly been that good in the past. McCormack was then marginalised out to the left, where, again, he's wasted. And we had Ruiz in the cam sitting behind Hugo at that point. So we were, sadly, you know, the whole perspective changed from our point of view. And I honestly didn't know what was going on. But with hindsight and knowing that the way the game was going, and also it was an injury, for me, the only move would have actually have been, I would have replaced Parker with Dan Byrne. And I'd have stuck Dan Byrne at the back, and I'd have pushed Bodger off to sit in front of them.
Interesting.
In the Parker role. Because that would have given us the height advantage at the back, because they were chucking stuff forward, and it would have maintained the strength in midfield, and we could have retained the shape that had been doing so well. But it
interesting
destroyed
take
the shape.
There, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, Kit was a bit hamstrung in a way, because we didn't have many options on the bench. We had all attacking options bar that. But that would have been the way forward for me, because the shape had been working for us. So to maintain the shape and also to remain strong, we lost so much when they made that change. And, I mean, it's credit to the guys, OK, we did let a goal in, but we hung on to the end. Because, you know, the whole thing just went out the window. I mean, McCormack wasn't half the player that he'd been in the first half. And, say, Kaká was out on the right. And it just didn't work. The whole thing just did not work. And, you know, even when they changed Rodriguez for Woodrow, it still didn't really work. It was too fragmented. We weren't getting passes together. I know we got a goal disallowed towards the end, obviously because Forrest were pushing forward, looking for the equaliser, and we managed to nick in, and we were a bit unlucky there. But it was a real kind of, you know, as I put on Twitter at the time, a real strange decision by Kit, I thought, and the one I've suggested would have been the only way I would have gone forward with it, knowing that Parker had to come off because he was injured.
Very interesting, David. I'm glad that you brought this up. And, Mike, I want to ask you about this because, again, when I saw the switch, and I'm thinking, well, this isn't like for like. What exactly is going on here? And then, of course, you changed the formation, and then afterwards, I'm thinking, well, what options did he have on the bench? And David just brought up, he really didn't have the right replacement for Parker. And this is actually a bigger situation. Why I think we need someone else to come in to play his role in case something happens to him. Again, a player that can play that role, Mike, is Tim Hoogland, but again, still injured. And Emerson Hyman, you know, could also, you know, do some of his role, but he's off right now. He's not with the club. I think he's still at the under-20 World Cup, not World Cup, under-20 CONCACAF tournament, or he could be on his way back. I'm not sure. So he's not available. So part of this had to do with availability, Mike, but I'm just curious what you would have done. David has a very interesting take of what he would have done, and I find that interesting. What would you have done?
Well, first of all, I'll say I knew when Parker went off it was an injury, because when he came out, he spoke to Sean Reid before the kickoff slightly and was sort of rubbing where I think it was sore. And so I expected him to come off. And then when he did and I saw Ruiz coming on, I thought, OK, just keep the shape, put Tunnicliffe or Fofana there, just keep the shape. And, of course, no, he goes and plays 4-2, 3-1, sticks Ruiz in the middle and McCormack, who, you know, I must bore people by saying we need to have two strikers all the time in this league. The defenders are just not good enough. And we should be right on top of them. And McCormack showed yesterday, you know, you're playing with someone else, two proper strikers up front, they link together, we get goals. And so I just couldn't believe it, really. And so you make one substitution, you end up making about four different positional changes. And so Kaká and McCormack, who were running wild, were now stuck out so that Ruiz could play that role in the middle. And Hugo's left up front on his own. And as Dave says, Woodrow came on, it didn't really make that much difference as well. And I just thought we played into their hands, to be honest. I mean, again, you know, you could have gone to a flat four by bringing on Williams, maybe. You know, there are other options. And certainly I don't agree with bringing Byrne on and putting Bodo off or someone in the holding role. You know, we saw Felix make mistakes like that, and we shouldn't be playing players out of position like that. So I definitely don't agree with that one.
Okay.
But yeah, there are options. Tunnicliffe would have been mine. I would have just asked him to play in the centre as the holding player. But you're right, there is a gap, and if we're going to sign anyone, I'd hope it's a defensive midfielder.
I agree, and I think that this situation shows that when he goes out, look at all the moves that had to be made because he went out, Mike. You know, and again, we could argue that, you know, again, bringing on Ruiz, then you actually have to shift things around even more. So everything changed, and nullified. You just mentioned nullified Kaká, nullified McCormack, changed everything. Then all of a sudden, you only have one striker up front. You give passionate reasons why you like two up front. I can see why. But this one move, this injury, affected everything. And they get the victory, they show the resolve. But it definitely, this one move changed the second half. They were being threatened before this even happened. Let's be honest here. But if Parker doesn't go off injured, are things a little bit different? Possibly, but we'll never know. But I just find it interesting that, like you guys mentioned, like four different things happened because one player went off. And that just shows why we need backup for Scott Parker, seriously. We need someone that can play that role. And, I think this is something that needs to be looked at in the transfer market because this – you know, this situation almost really hurt Fulham. They almost, you know, again, could have ended up with just a draw, or could have even lost the match. So, again, I'm a big fan of Scott Parker, but I think he needs backup. I think we need someone behind him. All right. David, back to you. Let's go. Again, Ruiz comes on in the 57th minute. 5 minutes later, this is when their goal came from Lansbury. Talk about this and do you think this is preventable or just a good goal by Lansbury?
Well, the actual execution, the shot was well taken. It had a sort of similar vein to McCormack's, really, from kind of the edge of the area or just inside, actually, and it was well placed. But it seemed they had much too much time and space there. There was two guys actually could have shot it. They almost went for the same ball. They were both kind of free to go for it, and Lansbury was the one who took it. So I think it all comes virtue of the change of shape and everything else. You know, Mike's right to a point, but I seem to remember somewhere that Bodroff has played a defensive midfield role, but that's why I was suggesting that. But you're right, we could have maintained the shape in another way. Maybe it would have required someone, you know, playing in the diamond that shouldn't be there. But otherwise, you know, I was even thinking we could have gone to the 4-4-2 with the dreaded Ruiz on the right and Kaká on the left, and just having the two in the middle with to keep McCormack up front. At least we would have.
Yeah.
I think that was the key to it because
you actually could have done that. You're right. I mean, it wouldn't have, you know, again, Ruiz out on the wing is not the greatest, but you're right. You could have done that.
At least it would have kept a better shape, I think, because Kaká doesn't go so well on the right. And, you know, you defend from the front in these situations. And if McCormack's up front doing what he does, then it takes the pressure off the rest. And I think it was difficult for them. You know, Forest were on, they were on a bit of a high, losing Parker. And, you know, it shows what a good job he does there. And there is no one else at the moment who does that role. That is the real problem we have, that there are others who could play there, but maybe they don't do the role, and he shows what a valuable person he is to the team. So I think, yeah, excellent finish, but it was preventable because, you know, they just had too much space running onto that ball.
Yeah. You know what, David, I watched that second goal, and I couldn't agree with you more. Way too much space. That's why I asked if it was preventable, because again, he had too much room to maneuver and scores a goal. And then as you can imagine, guys, you guys are probably feeling that, oh, you know, 3-2, this could end badly. And that's how I felt listening to it. Even watching it back, I'm like, how did they figure this one out? How did they hold on? And, Mike, I want to go to you. I want to ask you about something that Sean Davis said during the match, during this tough second half. He was talking about, I'm paraphrasing a little bit because I don't have the direct quote, but he was talking about how Nottingham Forest weren't playing better than Fulham, but we're getting to all the – we're winning the 50-50 challenges and doing some of the tough work, the terrible tough work. What are your thoughts on that? Did you see that they were just, you know – it's not that they were better, but they were just more determined at that point, or just fighting a little bit harder because they were behind. What are your thoughts on that? Because he just said that they were doing that extra work that we were doing in the first half.
Well, they were, you know, they were buoyed by the goal just for half time, and they're as I said earlier, they're fighting for Stuart Pearce's job, if you like, and their own positions as well. So they were definitely more up for it. We were cautious, we were nervous, and the change in formation didn't help because we became very static. So our players were finding it difficult where to move and what to do. They were almost felt as if they couldn't go in field or go forward too much, and we allowed them to come onto us. And again, a problem of only having one striker. So you have McCormick, who's got a hat-trick, scaring the life out of their defenders, and yet you withdraw him out onto the wing when really, get him in the centre, worrying everyone. So
yeah, good point.
We handed it to them. We said, here you are, we're going to go a little bit defensive, you come at us, and we're 3-1 up. We should be 3-2 up at the stage, and we should have been taking the game to them a lot more and threatening their centre-backs. Their centre-backs had a pretty fairly easy second half, maybe until about the last 5 minutes when they were really stretched. But, they're a physical side as well. Let's not forget that. The type of football they play, and we don't really have that. And when you look at the team we had out, you had Ruiz, Fofana, Tunnicliffe. I'd say Tunnicliffe's he's a tough player. Fofana, had a bit of a dodgy second half, and is still learning. And Ruiz is Ruiz, so you're not going to win any battles in the middle there. So for me, we gave them the momentum of the game from the get go, really, in the second half.
Okay, very very good take. And it sounds like you were talking about not that they were more determined, just that we were more cautious, and then again they were. Again, feeling the threat because they were down, the whole Stuart Pearce situation. They were determined, not that we weren't determined, just that we were playing more cautious and also the physical type of club they are compared to Fulham. It all unraveled a little bit in the second half, and it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate, but again, in the end, we get the victory, and that's the most important thing. And then also really to see this thing out. And David, again, like I said, nervous times going all the way to the end, and I'm going to take us all the way to the end to finish this off. And I'm going to talk about this opportunity by Colley Woodrow. This was a shot by Kaká, and then Colley Woodrow came in and finished it off, but he was offside. I have a feeling you had a very bad angle of this. Did you get a good look at this?
Well, I saw it perfectly, but I'm in the wrong position to judge on whether it was offside or not. I mean, the way I'm looking at it, Kaká's almost running directly at me from where he was and where I'm sitting. And I can see that it's a cross shot that's probably not going to go in. I think it needed to be touched in. And it's got to be a very, very close call, but there's no way. Only the people in Block A of the Johnny Haynes or in the other, in the Riverside stand would be able to see, apart from the assistant ref. It must have been close. If it was offside, it couldn't be by much. But
okay.
There's no way I could judge on that one.
Okay, because, again, seeing the replay, it's difficult to judge. Mike, I'm not sure where you sit. Did you get any better view of this?
No. I'm in an even worse position. I'm closer to the cottage than the goal.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, even looking at a replay, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, not a problem. All right. Well, in the end, we that was obviously in stoppage time when the goal was disallowed, and Fulham hold on for the 3-2 victory, and obviously it's a huge 3 points, and you know what? That's in the end, you know. And again, I go back to listening to what Kit said today, talking about the resolve, and that's something that you can build on. You know, these two victories at home, I thought were huge. I thought they needed to get these two victories, and again, it's actually three in a row. You know, going back to the FA Cup match against Wolves. So it's a good situation. I just want to see a full match. You know, two good halves. It's either one good, it's one good first half or one good second half. You know, how about two good halves? That's what I'd like to see. But in the end, most importantly, they got the victory, guys. All right. Let's now move on, and let's go to Stat Attack, and then we'll rate the players. All right, I'll give you guys the stats. And David already mentioned that the stats, are kind of interesting, especially with total shots. But here we go. Fulham had 52% of the possession, of Forest having 48. Total shots, Fulham had 11. Forest actually had 23. Shots on target, Fulham had 6. Forest had 7. Shooting accuracy, Fulham were at 55%, which is pretty good. Shooting accuracy for Forest, 30%. Passing accuracy, 73-71% in favor of Fulham. Fouls, Fulham had 12, Forest had 10. Corners, Fulham had 6. Corners, Forest had 8. Crosses, Fulham only had 12, and Forest had 35. And crossing accuracy, this is interesting, Fulham were at 8%, and Forest were at 20%. David, what stands out to you with the stats?
Well, the thing that stood out and punched me in the face, I'm sure there's a queue of people would like to do that to me, but it was the shots, obviously, that Forest had, double the number of shots that we did. And I think you've got to say, if you were a Forest fan, you would come away from that game feeling a bit upset that you didn't get something out of it, really, because of the way that they played. And because the chances they had, yes, we did have chances to make it even bigger in the first half, but there was some pretty much rear guard action. I mean, I think it was a Samba Belonga, I can get it right in a minute. He had that one right on the line almost. It was the cross was driven in at about 3,000 miles an hour, if you remember. He just hit him on the line and didn't go in. And we had the incidents with Stafelidis, his terrible back pass or a back pass header, and they had a lot of chances. It was a real rear guard action towards the end. And so, for me, it is the shots that shows that, it was one of those games where, we rode our luck. We deserved our luck. We got our noses in front, and, rightly so. And that just sort of earned us a little bit of luck, I think, really. But that was the one that stood out for me, the fact that they had twice as many shots as us, which is a little bit worrying, but we won the game, so that's the kind of, the goals are the things that count.
The goals are what counts, David. Again, I'm going back to what Kit said, again, you can look at this two ways. You can say that Fulham, gave up this lead and almost lost the match, or you can say, they held on. You can build on that. It gives you confidence that you were able to hold on to such a narrow lead. And, you know me, David, I'm a glass half full guy. So I actually see the positives out of how they ended the match. They were able to hold on for the victory. I think that's something that you can actually build on. Mike, over to you. What stands out to you from the stats?
Like David, it's the shots. I tried looking to see whether I could find a half-time figure, because I imagine the second half is where the majority of Forest's shots came from. That spell, that sort of 20 minutes straight after half-time where they were pretty much all over us all the time. So, yes, we're letting a lot of shots in, but their accuracy wasn't good and we had less shots. But that goes back to what I said, previously, second half, we sat back. We allowed them to come at us and we soaked up the pressure, if that's the right way to do it. We allowed a lot of crosses in. But I think that it also shows that Bodroff and Hutchison are dealing with those crosses, as well as Bettinelli. He came out and got a couple as well. So it's we still need to improve. I mean, 11 shots is not great. You really need to be aiming sort of, you know, 15 to 20 per game. And we've been very shy of that recently. And so, and I put it down to we're just not, you know, Kit's got him set up to be a little bit more cautious, a bit defensive. And he showed that second half, you know, whereas
yes. In
the first half we had it. We had players in the box. There's a lot of times David will agree, we get to the wing or we get the ball and there's one person in the box, whereas teams against us seem to have two or three. So it's finding that balance. But, you know, it's definitely, it's not so much the shots. I mean, there's only, what is it, seven on target?
Yes.
They're high and wide, a lot of them, which means we're defending, you know, as a group, which is making them be a little bit wild with their shots and, you know, going wide. So that's good. That's sort of a Hodgson-style sort of defending, blocking everything. But the crosses, like I just mentioned, you know, 35, that's a lot of crosses. So, again, we're not doubling up. The fullbacks are being left, you know, exposed again. And you really need to double up to stop that amount of crosses. And just 12 from us sums up how narrow we are, but it worked because we were playing the ball on the floor in the first half. But then also in the second half, how ineffective it was having Kaká and McCormick on each wing.
Yeah, you know, listen, Mike, it didn't work. You know, again, he tried something, it just didn't work, and you nailed it. Again, you have two players that are flying in the first half, and then they go out on the wing and really do nothing in the second half. And, you know, I like a lot of what Kit has done, but second half for me, again, this move didn't work. I mean, in the end, you get all 3 points, yes, but if we're being critical here, I don't think the move to have McCormick and Kaká out wide worked. You know, I just don't think this particular situation worked. All right, let's move on. Let's go rate the players. Let's start here. And, Mike, I'll go right back to you. Let's start with Marcus Bettinelli. I'm curious your thoughts and your rating for Marcus.
Okay, so I'm going to go with my opening at the top of the show when I said, you know, let's think about the positives. And so my scores are hopefully going to reflect that.
Okay.
Bettinelli, again, saved us point blank. He's very good at the point blank saves. And I can't blame him for either goal. And I thought he controlled his box well as well. Came out a few times. Could do with getting rid of the ball still a little bit quicker. I don't know if that's in instructions. But I'm going to give him an 8 because of really, really good. He saved us at times. And he just continues for me to just get that bit better every week.
It really is amazing to watch the growth of this goalkeeper. I'm telling you, he has really done such a great job. And I don't blame him for either goal. So very, very interesting take by you on Marcus Bettinelli. Over to you, David.
Well, basically the same. I actually gave him 7.5 for more or less the same reasons. I probably would have given him an 8, but I think there was one particular fumble that had us all hearts in mouth, and might have shown it better than me, but he seemed to lose it at the near post and just had to dive on it on the line. There's a couple of times when it was difficult because the ball was fizzing around in there. It was hard for me to see because it was a patty end, but I thought in the main he did very well. Some good claims, a couple of good saves, some point blank, especially like when Stafford is messed up and everything. So yeah, 7.5 for me. I thought, you know, positive performance by him.
Okay, very good. All right, guys, let's go to the fullbacks. Let's talk about Jack Rimmer and Kostas Stafoulidis, David.
Oh dear. Sorry, Mike. well, they both had shaky moments, especially in the first half. There was two things from Grimmer which I noted. One was a very bad pass. It was like a kind of a back pass, put us in trouble, but thankfully someone got there and cleared it. And there was another unnecessary corner given away when he tried to head it back to Bettinelli but missed badly. So on those, and there was a bit of wayward play by him. I don't think there was any major mistakes in the second half, but it's still, you know, he's still got a long way to come. And I think it's a very interesting point will be if and when Hoogland is fit, will Hoogland come back in or what? Because I think it will probably help Grimmer in a way that he doesn't get, you know, too full on in it. He gets a bit of a break from it at times as well. So I'm quite hoping that Hoogland does come back in, because I think Jack, he's certainly got potential, you know. He's quite lively down the line, but he needs to refine his game. On the basis of everything I saw, you know, the mistake thankfully got away with them. I'm going to give him a 6. Stafelidis, I mean, his header back was awful. It was absolutely awful. He put us really in trouble. And, you know, and a goal then would have really been, you know, a terrible blow. There was also the unnecessary free kick he gave away. It was completely unnecessary in my mind. I don't think Antonio or Asabalonga, whoever it was any threat, and he's just kind of gone through him, really. He's given away that free kick right on half-time. And some of his other play was a bit shaky as well, and I probably would have marked him very low, but there was that kind of clearance off the line or so. So I give him a 5.
Okay, wow. You give Stafelidis a 5. All right, Mike, over to you. And I know you guys have been going back and forth about these two players. So give your ratings for Stafelidis and also for Jack Grimmer.
Okay, I'll start with Stafelidis. I mean, I will give him a 6. It wasn't a good game for him. He did do the clearance, admittedly. But I thought over Christmas, sort of New Year, we even spoke about it on the show, I thought he'd suddenly improved. His tackling was good, and he was getting crosses in, and you know, he looked as if he'd finally arrived and was comfortable in that role. But the last few games, there's almost a feeling when he's being attacked, especially in the box, is God, you know, don't make a tackle, and because of he lacks a bit of pace, and you know, that is part of his game, and his tackling is just, his timing is so out, and it's a worry, really. I mean, I can see Kavanagh, if he's fit Saturday, although I'm not convinced he will be, I can see him coming in. But yeah, disappointing at times. But I'm still going to give him a 6, because, you know, he's part of a team which in that first half did play well. But yeah, a 6 from me. Grimmer, I almost feel as if I'm his, you know, flag waver online and on this show. I'm going to give him a 7. He did do the two mistakes that Dave says. One very poor pass to Parker, which was intercepted, and we got away with it. But I thought he did get down the wing. You know, he's beats a few players, gets the ball past him, and then runs down the wing. There's no one in front of him, and honestly, no one helping him out. And his only pass really is inside or backwards. So the only way he can get forward is to try and beat the man. He does that better than Stafelidis does. And second half, he was battling away, getting the tackles in, and how he was given a free kick against him at that very last sort of boot forward, I have no idea. But, yeah, 7 from me. Just on Grimmer, I would actually rest him Saturday if possible. So I think he's, as much as I like the youngsters and I'll protect them and I want them to play, you know, there's always the danger of, you know, they're still young, they haven't played this number of intense games in a row. And I could just see Grimmer second half, near the end, just tiring a bit and holding his hamstring. And I just feel that, yeah, take a Saturday off, you know, just rest, get back, you know, get back to full fitness and let someone else take that game.
Okay, very interesting take as always, Mike. I'm going to go right back to you. Let's talk about the center back. So let's talk about Botteroff and Hutchinson.
Well, I'm going to give them both a 7.5. They dealt with all the crosses coming in, as I said earlier, and they have got a good understanding now between each other. People complain about the passing between them all the time, but they know where they're going, the angles, they're getting the ball correct. Hutchinson, I'm so happy that he's found his way into the team, and after those early games where he looked out of his depth at times. And Botteroff has now settled into that left side, and Burn's going to find it very hard to get back in the team for any kind of long run, that's for sure, unless there's an injury, because, you know, despite letting in 2 goals and defensive frailties that we say we have, they are immense at times, just winning headers and throwing themselves around. So, yeah, 7.5 for each of them.
I thought they both played very well there, Mike. Okay, David, to you.
So likewise, I thought they were both, you know, pretty strong there. And there were some real good blocks. I mean, I can remember Bodroff and just throwing themselves at the ball at times just to make sure the shots weren't getting in. They really put themselves on the line. I thought they were both strong in the air, especially, you know, their difficult opponents. And I mean, I remember one very exquisite pass actually by Bodroff, which put McCormack away in the first half as well, which I was quite surprised at, because Bodroff sometimes, if I had a complaint about his game, it would be some of his longer balls. But I thought they both did really well. In the certain sense, it was difficult. They just about held out there, so 7.5 each as well.
Okay, good stuff there, David. All right, let's go to midfield. Let's do Scott Parker, and also let's do Seiko Fofana, David.
I thought Parker was his usual self until he was withdrawn. You know, and it saw what an important player he is. And he was the one that allowed the others to do what they did, I think. You know, he provided that cover and that shape. It, you know, he allows the shape to work. So I had no problem with his game. Obviously, it wasn't one of his most devastating games because he didn't see it through. But for the time he's on the pitch, I think he's worth 7 out of 10. Fofana, I think, you know, whereas he was the more impressive on Saturday, him and Tanikov, I think, you know, when I do my rating, you'll see. I thought Fofana, it was a bit of a quiet game for him. He had that shot where, you know, he didn't do badly, but, you know, maybe on another day he could have buried it. He was busy. I don't remember there being a lot of kind of threat from him, not as much as we've seen on other occasions where, you know, I mean, in this case, it's other people who were running at them and causing the problems and not so much him. But, you know, he did his part in the team, and I think it was a reasonable performance. I was 6.5 for me for Fofana.
Okay, good stuff. Mike, over to you on Scotty Parker and Seiko Fofana.
Well, Parker, I'm going to give an 8. I thought that first half he was the one orchestrating everything, just doing what I want him to do, which is just sit in that middle of the pitch and just keep the ball moving and let the others run around and do the hard work. So, and we saw, you know, when he went off, how badly we missed him. So, you know, for the hour he was on, I'm still going to give him an 8. Fofana, thought he had a good first half, was involved in a few nice moves, had that chance as well, getting himself in the box, and at times he looked very confident. Second half, he was, when we made the change and he went inside, he looked the 19-year-old who hasn't played in games where there's been these kind of tactical changes, and he found himself next to Tunnicliffe, not quite sure of what he should be doing, and slips over a number of times, which, you know, players at this level, when they're slipping over, it's because they're chasing and they're not really sure what they're doing. And so I'm going to give him a 6.5 as well. But he did a few useful things first half, but second half for me was a little bit disappointing.
Okay, very good. Mike, right back to you. Let's talk about Ryan Tunnicliffe and Alex Kaczyniklic.
Tunnicliffe was better than he was the other day, and it goes back to giving these players a run of half a dozen games, let them settle in. His strength, his passing, actually, he did a beautiful pass. I think it was might have been Kaká or might have been McCormack. I can't recall. But again, it was him linking up with McCormack, Parker, keeping the ball moving, getting some tackles in, and had a good, solid game. Second half, similar to Fofana, he found himself having to play this role, which he wasn't quite sure was he the one to sit or, you know, should he be doing something else? So a 7. And I think that's just down to, you know, explaining to players what their roles are. You know, they need to be briefed properly. You know, when we convert to this formation, that's your role. And I wasn't convinced he knew what he was doing the second half as much. So, yeah, 7. Kaká, thought he was excellent first half. Going to give him an 8. Was involved in most of the good moves. And you know, was attacking people as well, made himself available and was all over the pitch, playing in that unusual role. Well, we say unusual. Kit obviously thinks that's a good position for him, so I suspect we're going to see him play there a bit more. Second half, stuck out on the right, a position I do not like to see him play. And it showed when he didn't really do much at all. You know, he was unlucky at the end with the shot, but or the goal not being given. But yeah, an 8. I thought he was, you know, easily his best game since his comeback.
Okay, very good. David?
Well, I'm probably a bit harsh in a way, because the change of shape wasn't really their fault. So perhaps you could say, well, actually, we'll take the marks off Kit rather than taking it off the players. But I'm kind of marking on how their overall effectiveness was. And yeah, Tanner Cliffey, excellent first half. I was very impressed, actually, with his passing. It was better than I expected. He was, you know, and he was involved. There were all these little flicks and things and quick taps and stuff. So I thought he was excellent first half. Yeah, second half was a bit like the others, really. But I thought he was the better out of him and Farner. So I gave him a 7. Kaká, I mean, again, yes, I probably would have given him an 8, but I thought that he suffered, you know, had become much more peripheral player after 60 minutes, basically. Although he did have that run at the end, he was struggling to find the momentum that he had. It was, you know, and it is down to Kit, probably not him, I admit, but I also gave him a 7 on the basis that I thought he was excellent in the first half, but second half, much less of an impact.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, let's go right back to you. Let's talk about the guys up front. Let's talk about Ross McCormack and Hugo.
Well, Hugo, what can you say? We're all calling, you know, I think across the board everyone was calling for him to be rested and Cawley to play, if not even just, you know, to give Hugo a break before Saturday. But, you know, he hasn't had much involvement in the game, but what he has done, he's laid the ball off, you know, for McCormack to score. And they have got a great partnership going together, and as long as one of them is scoring, I guess that's half the thing. But I'm still concerned about his overall contribution. He wasn't really winning many headers. He wasn't really involved that much. I think the second half he had a run at goal when he should have probably gone direct, and he stopped and held back. So I think he could do a lot better than this. And, you know, I was really thinking of giving him a low mark, but I have to sort of mark him up a little bit for the assist. So I'm only going to give him a 6. It sounds harsh, I know, but I think his contribution to the game otherwise was pretty null. And McCormack, on the same basis as everyone else, I actually was thinking, you know, at half time, this is 10 out of 10, you can't do anything else here. But once again, you know, he was a completely different player once he was put out on the left. It was harder for him to do what he does, and I know it's not his fault, but obviously his impact on the game was much less threatening than it had been. So for me, he's still my man of the match, obviously, and it's still a 9 out of 10, but just lost a point for his kind of, you know, the way things went in the second half with him.
Okay, not a problem there, David. Over to you, Mike.
Well, I hate to say it, but me and David have given exactly the same scores for both players. 6 for Hugo and McCormack, 9. I would have given McCormack a 10 if he'd just stayed up front, I think, for the second half. But, yeah, he was least effective. You could argue, having looked at the second goal, he could have done a bit better to close him down. But, you know, first half he was untouchable, really, and exactly where he needs to play, right up front, challenging those centre-backs and full-backs. And so, yeah, best performance by him easily this season. So, yeah, 9 out of 10. Hugo, yeah, we all wanted him to have a rest, be dropped. You can't argue, though, 2 official assists involved in the header, which led to the third goal. He's now joint 2nd in the championship for assists. So he's not doing that bad overall. I suspect Woodrow will come in Saturday. But, you know, I'm happy for him getting the assist. He could have done better with his one-on-one, possibly in the first half. He was stretching for a little bit and the keeper did well. But second half isolated up top on his own. And, yeah, 6 out of 10.
Okay, very good. All right, let's move on. David, do you think we should rate Brian Ruiz? He's on since the 57th minute. I don't think we should rate Cawley, but I want to get your thoughts on it before we move ahead.
Well, I'm going to rate with Brian Ruiz. I mean, to be honest with you, he didn't do very much. What he did was out of character. I actually remember him fouling someone. I was almost impressed that he fouled someone, actually. I don't think he did that much. He did try and sort of add to the cause, but it really was not his situation then, because it just didn't work. You know, he was sitting there accommodating that position. As I said, he might as well have gone and played wide right and allowed them at least to play a more sensible shape with McCormack up front. Because it was at the stage where we were under pressure. So he wasn't getting the chance to do what he can do. So just 6 out of 10 for me for the fact that he did make an effort and he did try and kind of get stuck in. That's not really his game.
Okay, fair enough. Mike, how about you and Brian Ruiz?
Yeah, I'll give him a... I might stretch it to a 6.5 just for the little pass to Kaká. He showed a bit of class there with that. And he did battle at times, but the game went around him. You know, he had that free roll in the middle. And, you know, everyone went mad at the weekend about how great he was. Well, he had half hour and he didn't do half as much. So... you can't blame him for the change of formation. You know, that's down to kit and bringing him on. But he wasn't that effective. So 6.5.
Okay. Understandable. All right, guys. Let's move on. It's time to rate kit. This should be interesting because I have no idea what you guys are going to rate kit. But let's rate the full manager. Mike, I'll start with you.
Oh, thanks. Well, I mean, for the selection and the first half performance and how he got on to get going, you know, from the kickoff, you've got to be looking at, you know, an 8, almost 8 or 9 for the first half performance. But second half, you know, he's going to drop to as low as 4 for me. So, I don't know, I'm going to have to go somewhere. He's won, he's got the points, he's put out a good team, but second half, poor sub, bad tactics. 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. David?
Yeah, I think for about 44 minutes, he's earned, you know, a good 9 out of 10. Probably would have been 10 out of 10, but there were still a few little things to iron out. And also, you could argue that, you know, his bench is perhaps a little bit too one-sided, that he does need to have someone else on there who can cover that Parker role. Second half, okay, he couldn't help. He has to take Parker off, but I think he could have rearranged it better. The system, you know, and I saw it on Twitter, and I know there's obviously people there who are not particularly big fans of Brian Ruiz, but they're saying, oh, he's just, you know, once again, the whole team has been messed up just to accommodate Brian Ruiz. And it didn't look like that, but I think, you know, he could have probably done it a bit better second half. Certainly, maybe a better bench, and maybe he'll learn from that and make sure that there is someone on the bench. I mean, I'm not saying it's the answer, but had Mark Sovereign been on the bench, you know, at least he would have had a player like for like to play there. Not sure it would have been any better. We might have ended up getting beaten. But, you know, he needs to have someone there who can do that role, I think.
Okay.
It's a very key role. It's a very key role. So, yeah, in the same kind of way as Mike, this is what I normally do. I say, well, yeah, 9 out of 10 first half, and, you know, something like a 5 out of 10 for second half, probably 14 out of 2 halves, so 7 out of 10 overall.
Okay, interesting. 7 out of 10 for David, 6.5 for Mike on Kit. Very interesting. All right, David, right back to you. I'm curious your rating for Nottingham Forest.
Well, I mean, this is, again, for them a game of 2 halves. I mean, you know, in my preview I said they're strong up front, they're dangerous. You know, we talked about Asabalonga and Antonio and also Lansbury as being their key threats, and that, I think, really was the case, although Antonio probably was a bit hit and miss. Lansbury showed what a quality player he can be. But I said they have a fragility at the back, I don't know if I could say it anyway, that they have that. And, you know, it was just like a knife through butter, a warm knife through butter. And, you know, there was talk that one of their defenders got hauled off, didn't it, before half-time without even being injured, because Pierce was that dissatisfied with them. So, defensively, they were all over the place. And, you know, that's a virtue of our great quick play as well, because we were really fizzing the ball around. But they showed that they have, you know, they have some great talent there as well. And they obviously, they helped to sort of their part of an entertaining game. And as I say, I'm sure they will feel they should have got something from the match. So I think, you know, their performance, you'd be looking at, again, if we rated in the same way, probably like a 3 out of 10 first half. And a 9 out of 10 second half kind of scenario. So I'm going to give them overall 6 out of 10, which is, you know, in kind of an average mark, I suppose, based on a very poor first half and a very good second half.
Okay, interesting take there. Mike, how about you on Nottingham Forest?
I was lucky enough to have a Forest fan sat behind me for the whole game. Somehow he sneaked into the Johnny Haynes stand, and he never had a good word for Lansbury at all up until that free kick. So that was interesting. It reminded me of the bloke who sits two behind me who hated Christensen for the first three games. But, yeah, I mean, it's... I'm going to give them a 5 because, yeah, they were dreadful first half, better second half. So, you know, very average. Similar to us, aren't they, really, in a way that they can't play too. You know, last weekend they had a bad first half, better second half. They've done the same. They've obviously, you know, they can compete at this level, but you can also see why they're on such a bad run. And I'm not a fan of Pearce. I never have liked him as a manager of the England under-21s. And, you know, what I saw yesterday pretty much sums him up. You know, he's all about getting the team pumped up and playing a particular way, and it's not the way I like teams to play. They were doing some very well, you know, it's gamesmanship stuff again with Bettinelli at the corners, and you know, pulling his shirts, fouling him off the ball and all this kind of stuff. So he knows all those kind of tricks. But, yeah, Forest, I mean, they'll be fine. They'll be mid-table with us. We'll probably be right next to each other come the end of the season.
Okay, interesting take there, Mike. All right, let's go to the ref. Let's rate the ref, Mike.
I'm going to give him I'll give him a 7. No, I won't. No, I'll give him a 6 because I really didn't understand the... I'm going to give him take loads of marks off for that free kick he gave against Grimmer right at the end. I just did not understand it. It was right in front of me. It was never a foul. And I think there would have been a riot if they'd scored from that. I wasn't overly impressed, I have to say.
Okay, interesting. David?
Well, I thought actually, despite my reservations, what I said on the show, I thought he actually was excellent apart from the last few minutes. There was a lot of times we dived in and was winning the ball, and he was right there. And he, you know, some refs will just give fouls. But he didn't. I think he let the game go. I think his decision making was pretty good in the main. I can't think of too many controversial decisions until. Well, there were three things in the second half that I noted. There was one he fouled. He tackled Fofana actually, which was, you know, I was a bit disappointed that someone the size of Fofana got tackled by the ref, but. You know, he gave it up very easy to Fofana. He needed probably to go in a lot stronger there. And that led to, you know, a promising bit of play by us was broken down, and I think they went up and attacked from that. But they can't always be helped, these things. The refs do. They are meant to learn not to get in the way. But as Mike said, we had at the end, well, two things. The Kakalecic booking. And I can understand that if Kakalecic has been perceived to be time-wasting, that it's a yellow card. But the guy just kind of shoved Kakalic out of the way before he'd even had a chance. And I think Kakalic felt quite aggrieved, and I think that was a very harsh booking there. But the Jack Grimmer thing, I thought, what's that? I thought, it's going to be a free kick to Fulham here, but let's play the advantage. And then when he stopped it, and he's given it the other way, I thought, what the hell's happened here? And I thought, oh, well, maybe Grimmer's... I knew Grimmer had won the ball, and I thought, well, maybe Grimmer went in with a high foot or something, and so the ref has given it for that. But now I looked at the replay today, and I thought, what the hell was the ref doing there? That was a real mystery one. That blotted his copybook because I thought he was okay for them. So I thought he was excellent in parts, you know, because there were quite a lot of Forest down on the ground and shouting for things, and he didn't give it. I think he was a good, strong referee to have at home. So I was going to give him an 8, but I've knocked him down to a 7 for that very mysterious one on Grimmer there and the Kakalecic booking.
Okay, very good take there, David. I believe you already said your man of the match was Ross McCormack, correct?
Yeah, I think Mike has a
ready
as well by the virtue of his votes.
Okay. Mike, Ross McCormack as well?
Yeah, no contest. Yeah, nope. He was easily his best performance and of the season, and he obviously likes playing Forest. He's got 5 goals against him.
It's a good point. It's a good point about that. All right. Well, listen, I think it's Ross McCormack as well, but I just thought I'd throw it out there on the Cottage Talk Facebook page and just share some of the comments. I figured it would all be Ross McCormack, but there's some interesting comments in here. Tomato Rahman said, I'm guessing there will be a flood of Ross McCormacks here, and he's right about that. Steve Whittier said, can't look anywhere else, really, McCormack. However, Hugo teeing up Ross worked a treat for the first 2 goals. Hugo doesn't need to shoot if he doesn't. If he does that, leave it to Ross. Okay, Giannis, our co-host Giannis, actually gave it to me. He says Russ. I don't think I thought maybe he meant Ross, but it says Russ. Colm Bugler says I thought the ref had a good game. White touch paper and stand well back. William Burns says Ross Hutchinson was solid again and deserved a mention probably. Chris Boss says just added Hugo had 3 assists. 2 of them were really good touches. A very interesting take about Hugo in this. Brendan Cronin says, easy. Ross McCormack. Grant Harris says, Ross the boss. We're obviously going to get a lot of Ross McCormacks. Ben Pandeloid, McCormack, obviously. Simon Patey. David, Simon Patey says, you, Ross, for predicting the goals for Ross McCormack. Thank you very much, Simon. Harriet Oglethorpe, Ross McCormack, for all the things I said in a comment on the Cottage Talk post about the show. 3 goals, leadership when Parker was subbed, encouraging the crowd when Fulham corners were being taken in the second half. Very good take by Harriet. Roger Lewis can only be McCormack. Play him up near the top and he will always score. Play him deep or wide, he won't. Lars Anderson says the only one, Ross. And we'll end it with Alex Lowy. David, you'll appreciate this. He has Gabor Kiloi. No reaction from you, David? Or did I lose David for a second?
You cut me off. I
didn't cut you off, David. Are you there now?
Yeah, you reminded me. Colm Bugler actually had a message for you, Russ. He asked me to pass on.
Okay.
So he said, do the Patriots play Jordan Sparks and Chris Brown's song, No Air, before the match? Obviously relating to the Deflategate scandal.
Yes, very funny. Very funny there, Colm. Very funny. You know, I've heard them all. You know, I people have asked me if I have deflated balls. I've heard them all. Okay. Yes, everyone could take shots at me for being a Patriots fan. Whatever. It's fine.
Okay, Russ. I also have an alternative man of the match. Obviously, yeah.
Okay. Who's your alternative man of the match, David?
I think it's either the Fulham physio or it's Bettinelli, because when Bettinelli went down injured, panic was rife across the stadium. The thought of the pyjama wearing statue coming on, and then obviously because Bettinelli was down and motionless for just, you know, half a minute or so, and we thought, oh no, but he was back up on his feet thanks to his own fortitude and the physio, of course. So obviously you could argue he was man of the match that prevented old pyjamas coming on.
Okay, that's actually a very good take by you, David. Seriously, I like that take. All right, guys, I do want to wrap up this show, but before we do, I want to get quick your thoughts on Sunderland. David, you and I will be previewing that match tomorrow, but Mike, I want to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts going into this match against Sunderland in the FA Cup?
Well, I'm looking forward to the trip, and hopefully we'll see a good game. And I expect to see us make a few changes. I mean, we played, I think it's 4 games in 12 days, and I think 8 of that team from last night have played virtually every minute. So, don't be surprised to see some of the fringe players get a game. And looking at the boards, I don't know if Ruiz is going to be involved, but we'll have to see. But I think we'll do well to get a result, but hopefully we can put up a good performance, and who knows, maybe a replay, and see what we can get from that. But we should be confident of going in. It's going to be a good test for some of the youngsters, and a chance to impress Kit going forward for the rest of the season.
No, very good take there, Mike and David. We're going to talk about this tomorrow. Any thoughts right now before we talk about it tomorrow?
Well, I did offer Mike a room at Hotel Hully because he was moaning about getting up at 4:30 in the morning on Saturday morning because we don't have to get up till 10 a.m. thankfully. That's one of the rare advantages of living sort of up north is that we get, you know, an easy access to these games. But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to this, and it's been a busy week. Obviously, three matches Saturday to Saturday. So me and Minnie Ruiz and Corley Woodrow will be on our way up there on Saturday morning as well, so we can go through it tomorrow. And I mean, I hope, to be honest with you, that we are going to put a strong team out because it's, you know, it's a one-off match. It's there for winning. You know, anything can happen in a cup game. I'm not sure if any of the injuries are back. I mean, I know we were alluding to the fact that LVC might be in contention for this one, so that'll be
right.
Quite interesting. I think if Parker is out, it will probably be almost a given that LVC will have to come back in if he is fit as planned. I'm not sure about Hoogland and Amabiesh. I know they're coming back to training, but I don't think they're anywhere near ready yet. And yeah, and Brian Ruiz, I mean, you know, I just put something on Twitter just before we came on earlier, because there's been this rumour of the €5 million bid from, is it Boca Juniors, I think?
Yeah.
Which is about £3.8 million, which is... He's not as great as some people asked for, but it is more than four-fifths of you-know-what, Russ. So I think we should bite both our hands off if that is what's on the table, because for someone on such a short contract and, you know, 29 years of age, it will be our best chance of getting a return on our money. So I don't think he's happy, Ruiz, not particularly. I don't think he's enjoying his football with us. So I think it would be a good move all round if there is any truth in that. Maybe tomorrow when we come on the show, we can obviously... update on that if there's been anything. But, you know, I'm not sure about Ruiz on Saturday anyway, because if we do go somewhere like we did, I think Kaká at the moment has suddenly become the man in the frame for that position in the central midfield or in the cam role.
Yeah, no, listen, maybe we'll have an update on Ruiz, maybe we won't. You know, again, it's all speculation at this point. I heard the interview with Kidd earlier, and there's nothing concrete about coming in or coming out. You know, again, coming in, he said that they're close with someone, but again, nothing's definite yet. I'll be curious to see how that turns out, because obviously I'd like to see some players come in. Obviously there are rumors, David, we'll be talking about a few of the rumors tomorrow. But let's wrap up this show, and before we go, I want to mention, please, you know, again, around the world, you can listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app. A TuneIn app is a great way to listen on your mobile phone. Just download the app. The app is fantastic. I listen on my Android. It really works out great. You can listen to over 200 episodes. I should say not over 200 episodes of Cottage Talk. It's a very great way to listen to the show. Before we go, Mike, thank you very much for joining us tonight, my friend. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Russ. Hopefully we can... see what happens on Saturday, and we'll have some more games and in the cup, so we can have some more shows. And
absolutely, you know, listen, and I don't mind the extra shows. So if they, you know, if they keep on winning, fine by me. You know, we'll just do more shows. I don't have an issue with that. David, we'll be talking tomorrow, my friend.
Yeah, it's fine. It's almost my birthday weekend, so let's hope it's going to be a happy one, Fulham wise, and then we can talk again tomorrow. Look forward to it as always. And Mike, good to speak to you as always. Obviously, I know we speak a lot off air anyway, but you know, thanks for coming on at short notice. It made it interesting to hear your side of things as well, Mike. So speak to you soon.
Okay. Well, listen, guys, you were great. Let's wrap this up. For David and Mike, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you again for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Bye bye.
Boys and girls, London calling. Now don't look to us, phony Beatlemania.